We'll hear argument first this morning in Lopez versus Gonzalez and Toledo Flores versus United States. Mr. Long.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, a drug trafficking crime is defined in 18 U.S. Code Section 924C as any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act or two other federal statutes. Punishable is a key term. If that word is omitted, the remaining phrase, any felony under the Controlled Substances Act, clearly refers to felony violations of the Controlled Substances Act. The parties agree that punishable means subject to criminal sanction. So a drug trafficking crime under 924C is conduct that is subject to being punished under the Controlled Substances Act. State felonies are not themselves punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. It is not a federal crime to violate state law. The defendant's conduct may be punishable under both federal and state law, but a state felony is not a felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act.
Well, do you agree that if there were a state conviction for an offense that would have been punishable under the federal law, they're both being felonies, that the enhancement can apply in that instance, and that that does meet the definition?
Yes, Justice Kennedy. Our position is if the conduct would violate a felony provision of the Controlled Substances Act or one of the other two federal statutes, it then is a drug trafficking crime under 18 U.S. Code Section 924C, and therefore it is an aggravated felony. But there are three additional textual indications, in addition to simply the felony punishable language, that misdemeanor offenses under the Controlled Substances Act are not drug trafficking crimes under Section 924C. The first one is there are other provisions of Section 924, E, G, and K, where Congress actually used very similar language. It referred to conduct punishable under the Controlled Substances Act or the two other statutes, or offenses under the Controlled Substances Act or the two other federal statutes. But then it added an express reference to state offenses. So the implication is that when Congress meant to include state offenses, it said so.
Where are those sections?
You can find them. They're in the appendix to Lopez's blue brief, Justice Scalia. And the provisions on E, G, and K, 924 begins on page 3A of the appendix, and E begins on 5A, and you can pick up G is on 6A, K is on 7A.
What are the sections? V?
There's subsections E, G, and K.
All right.
And I will mention
that doesn't carry too much weight, though, because the provision that I'm looking at, G3, violates any state law relating to any controlled substance can be broader than what's punishable under the Federal Controlled Substances Act.
It is a bit broader, Mr. Chief Justice, but if you look at all of these provisions, the implication is clearly that Congress was referring to state law when it meant to include state law. I mean, if you look at E, for example, there it's a parallel construction. It's not broader. I think perhaps the government would say, well, we're talking about offenses. That's a little different from a felony, but offenses is actually a broader term. I'll mention an additional statute, which is not in the appendix, 18 U.S. Code Section 3559C2H. This provision, it's a similar provision. It defines a serious drug offense as an offense that is punishable under the specific sections of the Controlled Substances Act or an offense under state law that, had the offense been prosecuted in a court of the United States, would have been punishable under the CSA. An additional textual indication is it's agreed, and this Court has already said in Gonzalez against the United States, that a drug trafficking crime under 924C, under the criminal statute, must be a federal crime. 924C1A refers to a crime that may be prosecuted in a court of the United States, and that clearly refers to a federal crime. The definition of drug trafficking crime by its term says it is for purposes of 924C. So there is no reason why Congress would have wanted to include state felonies in a definition that applies to a federal criminal provision that all concede applies only to federal predicate offenses. And the government's interpretation would significantly broaden Section 924C to include federal misdemeanors.
In 8 U.S.C. 1101A43B, what, in your view, does the first phrase, illicit trafficking in a controlled substance, add to the reference to a drug trafficking crime defined by 924C?
Justice Alito, in our view, illicit trafficking means any offense that has a trafficking element, that is, distribution, possession with intent to distribute.
But are there any trafficking offenses that would not fall within 924C if you define a trafficking offense that way?
Yes. Most offenses under the Controlled Substances Act are trafficking offenses. There are a few that are simple possession. There is a date rape drug that I will not try to pronounce, but it's listed in 21 U.S.C. Section.
Well, no, there are mere possession offenses that are outlawed by 924C. But is it not the case that any, if you interpret trafficking to mean trafficking in the way the word would be used in ordinary speech, that any state trafficking offense you can think of would have a corresponding felony violation under the Controlled Substances Act, so that if you read the statute that way, the initial phrase is superfluous?
I believe the government has a footnote in their brief where they suggest there are some state trafficking offenses that actually do not have a parallel in federal law. Soliciting, I think, may be one of them. So I think there are, in fact, some. And our position, of course, is that by adding illicit trafficking, any trafficking offense, state or federal, whether or not it is punishable under the Controlled Substances Act, is an aggravated felony.
Well, let me ask the same question a different way. Since 924C includes some mere possession offenses, and illicit trafficking in a controlled substance includes all violations of 924C, doesn't that show that the way Congress used illicit trafficking in a controlled substance is not in the sense in which the term is used in ordinary speech, but it's much broader, so that it can include mere possession offenses?
Justice Alito, there is an argument. It's developed in the brief of the American Bar Association that because illicit trafficking is the general category, that all the aggravated felonies in this category should have a trafficking component. And therefore, the felonies punishable under the Controlled Substances Act that are simple possession offenses should not, in fact, be included. That is not an argument that we have pressed in our brief. We read the phrase to say illicit trafficking, including any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. So I would agree with you to the extent that if it is a felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act, Congress has said, by definition, that it is included in the category of illicit trafficking.
But that's ambiguous. That's perfectly ambiguous. Because the case of your client, it is a felony, and it is punishable under the Controlled Substances Act.
Well, Justice Breyer, it is a misdemeanor.
That's right. But it is a felony under South Dakota law. And what the statute says, and that's the government's argument, they say any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. They don't mean necessarily any felony punishable as a felony under the Controlled Substances Act.
Well,
I mean anything that is a felony, and it is also punishable, in which case you lose, but in the first case you win.
But you know,
so what am I supposed to look to decide?
Well, you could look to the case of Jerome against the United States, which was a unanimous decision of this court, in which the court held that just the phrase "any felony" in the federal bankruptcy statute should be interpreted to mean any federal felony.
Ah, but you don't mean that, because you're prepared to concede, at least I thought you were until your last argument, you're prepared to concede that if a person engages in a crime that is punishable as a felony under South Dakota law, And it is also punishable as a felony under federal law, under 801 et sec. Well, that counts.
Well, but, I mean, the government
Do you concede that or not?
The government accuses us of making that concession.
No, yes,
really
your answer
don't.
Is you don't make the concession?
We really don't. I mean, we concede that if the — 924C, the criminal statute, says nothing about state law. It says nothing about any conviction under federal or state law. It's simply a question of whether the conduct is punishable, capable of being punished under the Controlled Substances
Act. But I thought
that
was the concession you made in response to my question.
Well, yes, but I just want to be careful about the language in which we make this concession.
You make the concession, as I understand it, because it's a federal felony, not because it's a state felony. Isn't that right? Yeah.
If this is an ambiguous statute, what mileage do you get from Barrett? There is certainly an argument that what Congress was trying to do was to codify that practice of saying, if there is analogous felony, if there is analogous crime under state law, that should be included, and that made good sense.
Yes. If it's ambiguous and you look to the legislative history, I think we get considerable mileage from Barrett. The Congress was pretty clear that what it was doing was codifying Barrett. The Barrett approach, which was then followed by the BIA for more than a decade, was that they would count state drug crimes, but only if they were felonies under the federal statutes, under the Controlled Substances Act. So I think we get considerable mileage out of that.
You answered Justice Breyer by citing the Jerome case. After Jerome, we decided United States versus Gonzalez, having to do with the consecutive or concurrent sentencing term. And are those two cases in some tension? Gonzalez didn't mention Jerome, and I noticed that none of the briefs mentioned it either. Is there some tension in the cases, and if so, is this a case where when we write an opinion, whatever the outcome, we should talk about that? And if that's so, what should we say?
I don't see any tension. Gonzalez was just about consecutive versus concurrent sentences under state versus federal law. I mean, the Court has applied that principle.
But
for example,
it does seem to limit the broad statement in Jerome without mentioning Jerome.
Well, I mean, with respect, Justice Kennedy, I don't see how it limits it. And there have been other cases. Taylor is an example where the Court adopted a single definition of burglary for purposes of 924E. That applies the Jerome principle. I mean, it's a principle that has been applied in a number of this Court's cases.
But has it ever been applied to a statute that specifically says that the term aggravated felony applies to an offense described in this paragraph, whether in violation of federal or state law?
Well,
that would seem to me to be a very express legislative repudiation of the Jerome principle.
Well, when we get to that language, Mr. Chief Justice, and I do think it helps the analysis to first decide what is the definition of a drug trafficking crime under 924C, the criminal statute. Once you've decided that, now when you move back to the INA, there is this language. The term aggravated felony applies to an offense described in 101A43, whether in violation of federal or state law or the law of a foreign country. Now, we think that's pretty straightforward. It has to be an offense described. So a simple example is money laundering. The offense described in 18 U.S. Code Section 1956, money laundering, is an aggravated felony. So a violation of state law or a foreign law can be an aggravated felony, but only if it is the offense described in 1956. If states or a foreign government has a broader definition of money laundering, that can't count because it's not the offense described. And when you turn to a drug trafficking crime, the way that offense is described in 101A43 is Congress picked up in its entirety and without any modification, the definition of drug trafficking crime in 924C, a felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. So if you agree that in the criminal statute that means a felony violation of the Controlled Substances Act, the offense described is the felonies in the Controlled Substances Act, not the felonies and the misdemeanors. And if state law wants to call something that's a misdemeanor under federal law a felony, they can do that. but they can't expand the offense described. The offense described, the way Congress did that.
Are you saying it would also include state trafficking offense because it's described in the word trafficking?
Yes. I'm focusing on the definition of drug trafficking crime. It also, there's the illicit trafficking piece of this, and I should add, any state offense that is illicit trafficking is going to be an aggravated felony. We recognize that. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Long. Mr. Crooks, we'll hear now from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I would first like to address the government's contention that Mr. Toledo Flores's appeal is moot. His appeal of his sentence is not moot, primarily because he is still subject to the sentence that is the subject of that appeal. Even though Mr. Toledo Flores was released from prison on April 21st of this year and deported to Mexico, he's still subject to the supervised release portion of his sentence because supervised release is not automatically extinguished by deportation.
But there's no supervised release of people outside the United States.
There's no supervision of people outside the United States, Mr. Chief Justice, but he is still subject to the jurisdiction of the district court and still subject to the conditions of supervised release that are not dependent upon supervision.
Well, like what?
Well, for example, he shall not excessively use alcohol. He shall not associate with persons.
What's going to happen to him if he does that?
If the district court learns about it, he could be violated, he could be extradited back from Mexico, and he could face up to a year or more in prison.
Is that anything like that ever happened before with people subject to supervised release who are then deported? It would be the first time if the district court did that, right?
There have been instances in the case law where people on supervised release have been extradited back from foreign countries based on violations of their supervised release. But the point is, under the statutory scheme, Mr. Toledo Flores is still subject to the district court's jurisdiction. The district court retains jurisdiction to modify his supervised release, to change the conditions, or to cut the supervised release. If the district court learns of a violation and a violation warrant is filed within the supervised release period, then the supervised release period is effectively tolled, and the district court retains —
That period has how many months to run?
Until April 20th of next year, Your Honor.
You said you rely primarily on that argument. Do you have another argument?
Yes, we do, Your Honor. After April 20th, of course, in accordance with this Court's decisions in Spencer v. Kemna and Lane v. Williams, the Court needs to look for a collateral consequence of the then-expired sentence. And in this case, we point to the possibility that a retrospective reduction in the term of imprisonment, which, of course, will not give excess prison time back to Mr. Toledo Flores, but even to reduce the number of the sentence on paper, could be a favorable factor for him to get a waiver of inadmissibility should he ever want to get a non-immigrant visa in the future to come visit his U.S. citizen children.
We have a case involving standing which says that, you know, the doctrine of standing is more than a an exercise in the conceivable, and this seems to me an exercise in the conceivable. Nobody thinks your client is really, abstaining from tequila down in Mexico because he's on supervised release in the United States, or is going is going to apply, having been deported from the country for criminal offenses, is going to apply to come back in the country. These are ingenious exercises in the conceivable. This is just not the real world.
Well, my answer to that, Justice Scalia, is that this Court has never said that an appeal of a sentence may become moot before that sentence is expired. And in cases like Lane v. Williams and Spencer v. Kemna, the sentences were completely expired, and therefore the Court had to look for collateral consequences of the now expired sentence. Here, in contrast, Mr. Toledo Flores is still under the sentence, which is a direct consequence.
That depends on whether you consider the sentence to be effectively expired once he leaves the country if the sentence is one of supervised release, which is impossible once he leaves the country. Supervision being impossible, supervised release is not a realistic consequence of the prior conviction.
But that argument could be made with respect to a person who is in the United States who is subject to a term of probation where the only condition is that he not further violate the law. In that instance,
action can be taken against him if he does further violate the law under the terms of probation. The point is that the jurisdiction of the probation office or the district court doesn't extend to Mexico.
Well, that's true, but if we're talking about future violations of the law, it is very often the case that persons who are deported to Mexico do come back and do have their supervised release.
Well, you don't want to say that your case is not moot because your client is going to violate the law again in the future.
No, not at all, Your Honor, but I'm saying that in the respect that you just talked about for the U.S. citizen, it's not any different, that the court retains jurisdiction to violate the supervised release and to revoke it and then to send him back to prison.
No, but it is different in the respect that he would first have to violate the law by entering the United States.
That is true, but in most cases that is the only violation of supervised release for which they are later revoked. And in that respect, it would be no different from a person who violates his probation by driving while intoxicated or committing some other legal violation.
Do you work in this area?
On collateral consequences, do you have what is your best authority to say that it would keep this case from being moved?
We cited in our reply brief at page 4, Your Honor, the Hamdi case, United States v. Hamdi from the Second Circuit, where the Second Circuit found that the possibility of reducing the term of imprisonment even retrospectively could have an impact on the ability to get a waiver of inadmissibility in
the
future.
Because the length of the sentence counts heavily in the Attorney General's assessment, is that?
That's correct, Your Honor. In Hamdi, they pointed out that the length of the sentence goes to two of the three factors that are evaluated by immigration officials under a decision called Matter of Haranka that are used in evaluating whether a person should be granted a waiver of inadmissibility in the discretion of the Attorney General.
Do you think there's a realistic possibility that this person is going to be readmitted? A realistic possibility?
I do not know, Your Honor. He's got
U.S.
citizens.
You think there's a realistic possibility he's going to try to get readmitted so that he can be subjected to really enforced supervised release?
Well, I think that there is a possibility that he could qualify for a non-immigrant visa at some point.
Has he applied for such a visa? Has he expressed any intention to apply?
He has not, Your Honor, but he does have U.S. citizen children.
Then it's an exercise in the conceivable, it seems to me.
But this Court has never held that a sentence — it would be unfair to hold that an appeal of a sentence can be moot while that sentence is still in effect and when it can still have consequences for Mr. Toledo Flores. And that's what distinguishes this case from all the other cases decided by this Court, is that the sentence itself is the concrete and continuing injury that defeats mootness in this case.
May I ask this question? Supposing we say it's not moot and you prevail, could he be resentenced without being present in court?
Yes, he could, Your Honor. We do resentencing in absentia all the time in the Southern District of Texas
Have you ever heard of or had a client or heard of a person from Mexico who'd been deported because he was involved in drugs and the government wants to bring him back because it maybe be a witness, maybe something develops, some other members of the gang are there, they'd like his information?
That does happen occasionally. People are paroled in to testify in court proceedings or to cooperate with federal.
So if they pick up some friends of his who are engaged in drugs, the government might decide to try to get him back.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is there any indication that that's in the works, or is this just another conceivable thing?
There is no indication in the record that that is in the works. I do want to point out that
— Well, it's conceivable, I guess, that people will break their parole. Often it doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. Sometimes they want to get him back. Sometimes they don't.
That's all very true, Justice Breyer. I wanted to point out that in Campo Serrano, which we cited in our brief, this Court held that a deported alien's probation term was a continuing criminal sentence that saved the case from mootness. And the court pointed to the fact that that the deported alien in Campo Serrano could, just like Mr. Toledo Flores, have his conditional release revoked, and he could be re-imprisoned upon a finding that he had violated his conditions. And we believe that Campo Serrano points very strongly in the direction that this case is not moot. On the merits, I would just like to point out that the interpretation that is advanced by the petitioners here promotes the very sort of uniformity that this Court has found desirable in cases like Jerome v. United States and its progeny, including Taylor v. United States, in that the same conduct of conviction will have the same immigration and same federal sentencing consequences, irrespective of the labels or maximum prison terms affixed by the particular states that set out that conduct.
And thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Kneedler.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, in order for a state drug offense to be an aggravated felony under Section 1101A43B of the INA, there are two requirements. The underlying conduct must be punishable under the Controlled Substances Act or one of the other specified federal statutes, and it must be a felony. Because petitioner's underlying conduct here was punishable under the Controlled Substances Act and was a felony under state law, they were properly found to have committed aggravated felonies. That conclusion follows not just from Section 924C, but more importantly by the fact that what is relevant here is what is the meaning of 1101A43, which is the operative provision, which just happens to incorporate the definition of drug trafficking crime from 924C. And there are three features of 1101A43. Which,
I mean, you say it just happens. I mean,
it's in the statute. I'm sorry.
We're here.
It expressly incorporates it, yes. Yes. But the operative provision is Section 1101A43 of the INA, and there are three features of that that we think reinforce this conclusion. The first is that the consequences of aggravated felony status under the INA turn on whether one is convicted, not whether they have committed the crime. And that's true both with respect to the enhancement of sentences under 1326 and the immigration consequences. And we think it makes particular sense when you're talking about a conviction to look at how the crime is treated under the jurisdiction of conviction.
I thought the government has taken the position and as far as I know, all the courts of appeals have bought the government's argument that there you do not need a conviction.
You do not need a conviction under Section 924 if you're bringing a prosecution under Section 924C.
Yes,
you do not need a conviction. But in order the immigration consequences.
Yeah, but 924C is incorporated in 1101A43. It's
right.
Incorporated. So you want us to interpret 924C one way for criminal convictions, a criminal sentence, that is, you don't need a conviction in order to get the enhancement, but another way INA?
Our point is not that 924C requires a conviction when it's in the Immigration Act. It's that the immigration consequences of that incorporation turn on whether someone was convicted of an aggravated felony.
The
ground of deportation for that refers to aggravated felony refers to someone who has been convicted of an aggravated felony. The ineligibility for cancellation of removal turns on whether someone has been convicted of an aggravated felony. And the enhanced penalties under Section 1326 for someone whose illegal reentry following aggravated felony is for a conviction for an aggravated felony. So my point is that under the INA, the consequences turn on conviction, and it makes sense to look at the jurisdiction of conviction, here state law, to see whether to look at this to determine the status of the crime. And since state law determines it to be a felony,
that's the proper place
to look.
If there is room for more than one construction of this statute, it seems to me unseemly in the immigration context to say that two people who have committed the identical acts, one of them is barred from ever coming back, doesn't have any of the dispensations, and the other does because of the happenstance of the state in which they were convicted. That kind of disuniformity in an area where the Constitution expressly charges Congress with authority to make uniform laws, doesn't that uniform law specification in the Constitution tug in the direction of the interpretation that Mr. Long was presenting?
No, we think it does for several reasons. First, with respect to the constitutional requirement, the uniformity provision applies to uniform rules of naturalization, that is, citizenship. We're not talking about citizenship here. We're talking about the eligibility of aliens to remain in the country. Beyond that, even where the uniformity clause applies, and there's, for example, a parallel uniformity clause for bankruptcy, that's never been interpreted to mean that that consequences of certain conduct under state law can have no impact on bankruptcy law, and that there can't be a variation. The state law homestead exemption under the bankruptcy laws is a good example of that. Going beyond that, with respect to the issue of uniformity generally, Congress has established uniform standards in Section 1101, either in terms of identifying the conduct in certain instances, in other instances by identifying the minimum sentence that was actually imposed. In this case, we think, with respect to drug trafficking crimes, it's imposed a uniform standard in terms of the length of the sentence. It has to be a felony. That is uniformity. But to answer your point more directly, it is a principle throughout 1101A43 that one looks to state law, not to some supposed uniform standard of federal law. And for example, if you several subparagraphs, and if you 1101A43 is set out at page 12A of the appendix to our brief, three subparagraphs, J, Q, and T, refer to the sentence that may be imposed for a violation. Well, when you're talking about a state conviction, that's clearly referring to the sentence that may be imposed under state law for a conviction. Four other subparagraphs, F, G, R, and S, turn on the sentence that was actually imposed. That means that in the case of a state crime, as we have here, that state law has to authorize the sentence, and that the state court, applying state sentencing principles, has actually imposed a crime of at least 1 year. So it is infused in Section 1101A43 that, in fact, you do look to the consequences of an offense under state law.
I'm prepared to accept perfect ambiguity here, linguistically. And I thought of an empirical question that you may know the answer to that might shed some light. Now, going along the way, maybe I'm making a mistake, point it out if I am, but I go to the key thing here, which is the words in 924C. What is a drug trafficking crime? A drug trafficking crime is a crime, any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. That could mean an act physically that is a felony under some law and is also punishable under the Controlled Substances Act as a misdemeanor. Okay? Felony under South, it could pick that up. And it also could mean any conduct which is punishable as a felony under the Controlled Substances Act. And I could look at those words 1,000 times and not have a clue which it means. So I thought of an empirical test. This statute, 924C, happens to be a statute that if you engage in a drug trafficking crime, as defined, and you have a gun with you, you get mandatory 5 years. That's the point of it. And the government does all the prosecuting. So in how many cases where a person committed a misdemeanor offense, simple possession, and had a gun, did the government insist that they get the 5 years minimum? Now, if you're prepared to tell me a lot of them, I'm prepared to tell you the government has consistently interpreted the statute the way you are now. But if you're prepared to tell me zero, I would say I would be suspicious of an interpretation that comes along now for the first time. And my mind is open on it. I'm quite interested in the answer.
To my knowledge, we have not brought crime prosecutions under 924C1 based on the circumstances you posit. But I don't think that goes very far with respect to answering this question. For one thing, as this Court pointed out in the Gonzales decision, the requirement that there be a federal crime and therefore a federal felony under 924C2 comes from the language in 924C1 that says that the crime must be subject to prosecution in a court of the United States. And this Court in Gonzales said it's that language that renders it a requirement that it be a federal crime. The definition
of — we both agree. Everybody agrees here. It doesn't have to be a federal crime.
It doesn't have to be under 1101.
Right. It doesn't have to be. It could be conduct that violates the state law and punish it under state law, but the conduct involved would have to constitute what is a felony under the Controlled Substance
Act. In our view, it would have to constitute.
A felony or a misdemeanor.
It would have to be punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. But the important point here is —
So I say it's suspicious.
But the question is not what 924C2 means standing alone or in the abstract. It's what it means as incorporated into 1101A43.
When you get to that, it must give you pause that your analysis is of a term, drug trafficking crime or illicit trafficking, and your theory leads to the conclusion that simple possession equates with drug trafficking.
Well, the petitioners concede, as I understand it, I heard Mr. Long, I think, concede that possession offenses can constitute aggravated felonies under this provision. That there's the recidivist possession, there's the possession of the date rape drug, there's possession of 5 grams or more of cocaine. All of those are specified as being felonies under 844. Beyond that, it's important to take into account that a lot of state statutes dealing with drugs are not patterned directly after the federal statute, and there's no reason why Congress would have insisted that they do so in order for this statute to operate sensibly. And one notable example, for instance, is when it comes to possession of a substantial amount of drugs, that certainly would create a strong implication that the defendant was engaged in trafficking activities or intended to. The federal statute deals with that by making it a felony to possess with intent to distribute the drug. A number of states don't do that. They instead have graduated possession offenses based on the quantity of drugs that the defendant is possessing, that above a certain quantity of drugs, it would be a felony. They're getting at the same problem, but they've come at it in a different way.
And in those cases, you can say the conduct would constitute a felony under the federal statute. But here, if I recall correctly, the amount involved would not have qualified for possession with intent to distribute under federal law.
Well, it would always be up to the jury to decide that. Now, in Mr. Lopez's case, he was initially charged with a series of offenses that went beyond the aiding and abetting of possession that he ultimately pleaded guilty to. But as he testified in his immigration hearing, his aiding and abetting of possession was assisting someone in purchasing drugs, which was itself a trafficking element. And so this shows that the way the state crimes are defined or applied are often getting at what federal law.
Yes, we have a case in which we're assuming for our purposes we just have possession. I mean, I understand that the facts of this case. And I wanted to ask — I have two questions, Mr. Kneedler. One of them, the second one I asked, it, you were going to mention three different points, one about conviction, you had two other points you didn't get to. I want to learn what those were. But before that, it seems to me that when you put the whole statute, all the different statutory provisions together, you really boil down and focus on 924C2. In the words, for purpose of this subsection, the term drug trafficking crime means any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. And if the word federal had been inserted before the word felony in the statute, would that not make the statute perfectly clear?
It probably would, but I think it's interesting that the version of 924C that was in effect prior to 1988 said exactly that. It said felony violation of federal law.
So the change was intended to be substantive or merely stylistic.
Congress did change it in the 1988 Act, but it did it, and this is significant, it did it in connection with two changes in the immigration law. One is the enactment of the definition of aggravated felony, which, as I've explained, the definition of aggravated felony looks to state law in a number of respects in terms of the severity of the offense or the punishment actually imposed. That was one change. The other change that was made in the 1988 Act was to amend Section 1326 with respect to illegal reentries. And it did that by enhancing the penalty for conviction of any felony other than an aggravated felony and an aggravated felony. And certainly the conviction of any felony includes state law offenses in this.
Again, Mr. Medina, focusing again on that specific language, you're saying, in effect, that phrase means any state or federal felony punishable under the federal statutes.
Yes, it says any felony, and that is our view. And
is it ever true that a state felony is punishable under a federal statute?
The conduct is punishable.
Yes, I know.
The conduct is punishable.
But do you know of any instance where we've said a state felony is punishable under a federal statute?
I think not used in that sense, but I think it's important to look at the language as a whole. It does not say punishable as a felony under.
But you do agree that the key to the case is how we read that one sentence.
Well, no, I agree that in my view, the key to the case is in 1101A43. Because if you look at the structure of 1101A43, and this gets to the question you mentioned that I had three reasons. One is that under the INA, the conviction consequences turn on the conviction of an aggravated felony. It only makes sense to look at the jurisdiction of conviction to determine the nature of the crime, whether it's a felony.
All right,
but you don't look to the jurisdiction of conviction. You're telling me you require a conviction? I thought you told me you don't require a conviction.
No, under 924C, you don't. But if you're bringing a federal prosecution under 924C, the term aggravated felony has no role in that determination. It is a separate federal crime. We're talking about here the consequences of the consequences of being an aggravated felon under 1101A43, or where does the definition of aggravated felony apply? It only applies under the INA if someone has been convicted of an aggravated felony. You're only subject to deportation for aggravated felony if you've been convicted. You're ineligible for cancellation or removal. You're subject to sentence enhancement. All those things follow on conviction, and we think it only makes sense to look to the jurisdiction of conviction.
All right, Mr. Needler, assuming that, as I understand it, the answer you just gave, your second point, as well as the point that you and Justice Stevens were debating, turns, in your view, on a definition or a reading of the statute that would work this way, that if under state law the act were a felony, but under federal law the action was merely a misdemeanor, it would still, for purposes of this definition, be an aggravated felony.
That's correct.
Isn't that very strange that Congress would have wanted a reading of the statute that would turn its definition of a misdemeanor crime into an aggravated felony for purposes of the immigration law?
I don't think so at all.
For one thing,
as I've mentioned, the structure of the Act as a whole of 1101A43 and their numerous subsections look to how the crime, what the authorized punishment was, or look to how the person was actually sentenced under state law, not under federal law.
I
also haven't mentioned the explicit provision that one of the other justices mentioned earlier, I think the Chief Justice, that the penultimate sentence of 1101A43 says that an offense constitutes an aggravated felony, whether in violation of federal or state law.
Well, I know it says that, but that doesn't necessarily take you any further than saying that if the words of the statute refer to something that could be a state law felony under the penultimate sentence, it will count. It does not necessarily answer the question that we have, and that is whether a particular reference in the statute is a reference to a federal felony or a state felony. So it has the penultimate sentence has work to do, and in fact we can see the work being done in the very definition of drug trafficking. but it doesn't necessarily lead to the conclusion that you draw from it.
Well, we think it's a strong confirmation of the pattern in 1101A43 that the statute looks to what happened in state court and the state punishment that was authorized there, and the express mention of that, or
even when the consequence in effect is to turn turn the gravity of a federal misdemeanor into the gravity of a felony if it happens to be a state felony.
The Federal Controlled Substances Act does not occupy the field of drug control in the country any more than any other federal crime occupies that field.
And no, I realize that, but if we're asking what is important in the mind of Congress for purposes of the immigration law, one would suppose that the most obvious touchstone of importance is the way federal law deals with it, i.e., in the case of a crime, whether federal law calls it a felony or federal law calls it a misdemeanor. And on your reading, when federal law calls it a misdemeanor, if state law calls it a felony, it becomes a federal felony for the immigration law, and that's what seems to me odd.
Right, and this is not the only place where that consequence can arise. There are cases involving what's a crime of violence, which under subparagraph G is another aggravated felony. The crime of violence is defined in 18 U.S.C. Section 16. Subsection B of that, this Court considered that statute in Leocal, requires that the offense be a felony, which creates a serious risk of physical harm. The courts have looked to the state law of conviction to determine whether something is a felony.
Mr. Leader, may I just ask one more?
Sure.
It's one thing to turn to state law to get an answer where there is no other answer. The problem here is that state law and federal law are at odds in determining the gravity of the offense. The federal law, on my hypothesis, would say it is minor, it's just a misdemeanor. The state says, no, it is a felony. It seems to me very odd, given the tension between the state and federal classifications, to say that for federal purposes, the state classification is going to trump the federal classification. And that's a different situation from the one you posit.
Well, and if I could just mention one other example, under the theft offense category in subsection, I think it's F, where a theft offense is deemed to be an aggravated felony if a sentence of at least 1 year was imposed. There are misdemeanor offenses there that, as a matter of federal law, it can be a misdemeanor for certain types of theft offenses, and yet they are covered as aggravated felonies. And again, that would be —
Mr. Nito, could I ask you about your assertion that you look to the state of conviction? What do you mean by that for purposes of 1101? Does that mean if you're convicted in state court of a misdemeanor, and even though that action would be a federal felony, it's not an aggravated felony?
That is our position, yes, because the requirement —
So it's sort of a double inconsistency. Not only do you treat state actions that are minimal where the state treats it more seriously than the federal government, not only do you follow the state, but where the state treats it less leniently than the federal government, you also follow the state.
Well, and
is that right?
Yes, and we think
so. You look to the state of conviction. That's for purposes of the immigration law.
The immigration law, and again, we think that.
Now, do you do the same for purposes of the felony enhancement provision?
924C. No, you don't, because the aggravated felony question has no aggravated felony term has no operative significance under 924.
Well, that seems
itself
to be very strange. You would look to the state law for purposes of the immigration section, but for purposes of 924C, what would you look to? Either one.
No, 924.
For 924, whichever one would make it a felony.
No, under 924C1, this court in the Gonzales case said that it has to be a federal crime, but not because of the definition in 924C2.
If it's a felony under either one for purposes of 924C, you lose, right?
I don't think I.
No. If the act is either a state felony or a federal felony, you lose. I mean, the defendant gets the enhanced sentence, right, under 924C.
No.
No.
Under 924C, the cases that have been brought have all been situations where it is a federal offense. But because — not because of the language in 924C2, but because of the language in 924C1.
My question is a simple one. If it's — it seems to me, if it's — what you're saying is, if it is either a felony under federal law or a felony under state law, you get the enhanced sentence under 924C. Isn't that right?
My understanding of the way 924C1 has operated is that if it is a misdemeanor under federal law, but maybe it would be a federal felony, it would not be — it would not give rise to the enhancement because it is not a —
That's what the whole argument is about, whether it has to be a felony under federal law. You're telling me if it's a misdemeanor under federal law, you don't get the enhancement?
But not under — not under 924C2, the definitional provision.
Look, 924C1 says that if you have a gun and you have a drug trafficking crime, boop, 5 years. Okay, now we go to 2. What's a drug trafficking crime? It means any felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act. Now, on your definition, we first look to see whether simple possession is punishable under the Gun Controlled Substances Act. It sure is. It sure is. It's punishable as a misdemeanor. So it meets that. Under your definition, is it a felony? Yep, it's a felony in South Dakota. Okay, so now we've got a prosecution, federal court in South Dakota, and on your reading of the statute, that guy should get a bump up of 5 years.
No, that is not our reading of the statute. Right. The only thing that is incorporated into 1101A43 is the definition in C2, not C1, the definition of drug trafficking crime in C2, which says felony punishable under the Controlled Substances Act.
Right.
That is what gets plugged into 1101A43.
Right.
Along with all of the other provisions in 1101A43, you look to state law in the case of a state offense, the state of conviction, the jurisdiction of conviction, to determine the nature of the crime.
But you still have to know whether that word felony in 2 means any felony punishable as a felony under the Controlled you have to know the answer.
A number of courts of appeals that have looked at this in the sentencing context over the years have concluded that that the absence of that language is very significant, and the presence of the language that says any felony is also significant.
Never mind sentencing. Let's get back to the immigration. If I understand what you're now saying, if you're convicted in state court of action that is a federal felony, but it's just a state misdemeanor, right? You look to the state of conviction, and it would be a misdemeanor, and the immigration provisions would not take effect. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, and that's not true.
It's extraordinary.
No, but that's not only true under this provision of 1101A43. The other provisions, F and G and J and Q and T that I mentioned that look to the sentence that may be imposed under state law or that was actually imposed would likewise render someone in that situation who was convicted of only a misdemeanor in state court, even though it might be a felony under federal law, they would not be convicted of an aggravated felony because of the way Congress chose to write 1101A43.
Is that a reasonable interpretation? Let's say the statute's ambiguous, and you've convinced us there's no constitutional requirement of uniformity here. But is it reasonable to assume that Congress would want the different consequences to depend on the state of conviction?
I think it is.
Is there anything in the legislative history suggesting that?
I think it's on the face of the statute.
Barrett suggests otherwise. If what Congress was trying to do was to codify that practice of looking for an analogous crime under state law, that seems to me at least what Congress was trying to do.
Well, the legislative history of the amendment in 1990 does not discuss the aspect of Barrett that went to the comparison to decide what circumstances there would be an analogous federal crime. It was clear that it wanted to ratify the result that state crimes are covered, but we think that that was evident from the 1988 amendments that both enacted the definition of aggravated felony, revised the definition of drug trafficking crime to delete the requirement that it be a federal felony. That was deleted in 1988. And enhanced sentences under 1326, clearly by reference to whether someone was convicted of a state felony without any general federal minimum.
May I just switch gears for a moment, because your time is almost up and you haven't addressed the mootness problem in Toledo, Florida.
In Toledo, Florida.
Is the Second Circuit wrong in U.S. v. Hamdi? Because it seems to me that U.S. v. Hamdi is on all fours with respect to mootness.
So I think it is wrong under this Court's decision in Spencer versus Chemna and other cases that if the possible consequence turns on a discretionary judgment that may be made by someone else, that is too speculative to constitute a real live case or controversy. And that's what I understand Toledo Flores to be arguing, is that if he applied for discretionary relief in the future, it might matter because his sentence might be reduced slightly. I should point out that in the district court, Toledo Flores conceded that if he didn't get an 8-level sentence enhancement, he would get a 4-level sentence enhancement because this is at least a felony within the meaning of the adjacent provision of the guidelines. That would result in a guideline range of 24 to 30 months. He would then have gotten 24 months under that guideline range, the very same thing that he got here. And under the guidelines at the time, a supervised release was mandatory, and a one-year term of supervised release was mandatory in those circumstances. He would have gotten exactly the same term of supervised release if he'd gotten only the 4-level enhancement rather than the 8-level enhancement. I also think that it is somewhat far-fetched to think that given the fact that Toledo Flores had more than 12 illegal entries into the United States and various state offenses, that the determination of whether the Attorney General would actually grant discretionary relief would turn on a marginal difference in the sentence on this one particular offense.
Thank you, Mr. Kneedler. Mr. Long, you have 4 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. In answer to Justice Breyer's question, Mr. Kneedler said that a federal misdemeanor is a drug trafficking crime under Section 924C if a state punishes it as a felony. He said, well, the federal government never prosecutes federal misdemeanors under Section 924C. He said the reason is because of 924C1A, and the language there is it has to be an offense for which the person may be prosecuted in a court of the United States. But that language, a person may be prosecuted in the court of the United States for a misdemeanor. So the government is making an argument that, to my knowledge, has never been accepted by any court, has not ever been advanced by the government in a criminal context, and that would significantly expand Section 924C and numerous other criminal statutes that we cite in our brief that use the same definition of drug trafficking crime. Mr. Kneedler also said that the aggravated felony provisions in Section 101A43 refer to state law, but I read them just the opposite. There are two kinds. There are 21 of them. Many of them say an offense described in 18 U.S. Code Section X. I mean, that's really what we're dealing with, one of those here. So it clearly goes to federal law to define the offense. Now, if state law or foreign law also punishes that offense, then it's an aggravated felony. But clearly, federal law is defining the offense. There are other categories, such as murder and theft, that are defined in general terms. But the government's position, as I understand it, is, again, you use a generic, uniform definition. You don't pick any definition that the states may have. The court just granted
it. I thought you conceded that a state offense could constitute illicit trafficking.
Well, yes, Mr. Chief Justice, but again, to be clear, and I think this is consistent with the government's position in other cases, ultimately there will be some uniform federal definition of what constitutes illicit trafficking. It would be some commercial element, would probably be the definition. The court hasn't decided. States can define it more broadly, but the actual definition, just as the definition of burglary.
Do you think there's a uniform federal definition of a theft offense?
Well, in the Taylor case, in burglary, the court has a methodology for this. You pick a sort of generic definition. It may not come from a federal statute. It could.
There's no variation in state offenses that would fall within that, a theft offense?
Well, again, this is the provision we're dealing with. It looks to federal law, the Controlled Substances Act, and two other statutes. My understanding of the government's position, and it's consistent with this Court's cases in Taylor, is that even when it's a generic offense, you would still have a uniform definition. And that is certainly consistent with the principle of uniformity that applies both in criminal law and in immigration law. I mean, if there's any ambiguity at the end of the day, ambiguities are supposed to be resolved in favor of uniformity, uniform federal law, uniform federal criminal law, and uniform immigration law. Effectively, what the government is arguing is that states can banish non-citizens and can do so by enacting drug laws, deciding to make a simple possession offense a felony. That's a decision that a state would make almost certainly for reasons that have little or nothing to do with immigration. And it's highly unlikely that Congress would have left that determination to states. On uniformity, aggravated felonies is a condition for citizenship. If you're convicted of an aggravated felony, you may not become a U.S. citizen. You are foreclosed from establishing good moral character. So, in fact, citizenship is at stake here, and the uniformity clause is in play. There are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Long. The case is submitted.
Associated U.S. Who's that?